Black Alert Podcast, your millennial reference for all things Trek across all four quadrants. I am Marisha Ethicon, joined by Travis and Tia, and we're here to discuss season 5, the episode 4, The Time Bug. No, what's the actual name of this episode?
Face the Strange.
But yeah, it's a time bug, y'all, so let's get into this.
It's a time bug with Voyager implications. Actually, I kind of squealed a bit when I heard Krenim, because Year of Hell Parts 1 and 2 is actually like my favorite episodes of Voyager ever. I've seen them a million times.
The best
times.
Episodes of Voyager, my God.
So when I heard Krenim, I was like, oh my God. But it's doing what I'm trying not to get too like excited about it, because it's doing what Picard did. And it's like, oh, I know the Krenim.
Remember when? Remember that?
Yeah, remember berries. Like, that's all.
We didn't left Trill.
But what it also did was make the Time War that was referenced earlier when Discovery first arrived. It kind of inserted Star Trek Online's continuity into the show, because the Krenim are a major part of the Time War in Star Trek Online. Mm-hmm. So I'm willing to just say that Star Trek Online at some point is canon.
Let's do it then. Well, I thought they would go to the Enterprise folks, but I like the insertion of the Krenim, because it, you know, the Delta Quadrant outside of the Borg doesn't really get its due in the storylines. So hearing about a Delta Quadrant antagonist kind of brings them into the story more than just independent Voyager stuff. And I like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to hear about the Vidians in this era.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially to find out, I'd love to find out, like, the Vidians are, like, the most beautiful race in the galaxy or something now. they've taken all of their knowledge of medicine and turned themselves into, like, the plastic surgeons of, like, the Delta Quadrant.
I feel like, you know, somebody looking at somebody, oh, you have some work by some Vidians, huh?
Exactly.
They are the best.
Somebody went to the Vidians.
That's
lovely.
We have this time war. We have the Krenim chronophage, which the phage was, if you call the disease afflicting the Vidians. So the chronophage. So I kind of got like a little bit, even though I know that's not deliberate. It made me laugh a little.
How do we know it's not deliberate? I would actually. I'm riding to that. That was deliberate. The Krenim and the Vidians have teamed up post Janeway.
Really?
That's where I'm going with that.
Yeah. I like it. I like
that. You know what? She pissed off a lot of people in that quadrant. That's entirely possible.
I'm all right.
I can dig it. And so our antagonist, Mole and Locke, have gotten their hands on a time weapon. For some people who are trying to make a lot of money, they seem to be spending a lot of money on weapons and things.
I know.
To stop the Discovery crew from chasing after them or getting their hands on the next clue. And the way that they did it, and we forgot to reference this in the previous episode, is that Maul had infiltrated Trill.
How?
In the Guardian's cave. I don't know. I don't understand how she was able to get in. I doubt that they have Guardians that they don't see the faces of. But she managed to put the Krenim weapon on the uniform of Adira, and Adira accidentally carried it onto the ship. So it somehow...
Water filters, buffers...
Yes, it somehow managed to evade the filters of the ship.
Well, it cloaks. The thing cloaks.
And it cloaks. So but if we recall, they phased out of time. So I'm going to assume the weapon itself phases out of time as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it also looked like it was made of programmable matter.
We all dealing with plot hole armor. Okay.
Well, the Krenim did phase out of time in Voyager, so they couldn't really be found on by scanners. They were existing on like in a pocket universe. And that was how they were able to evade, like, Janeway's censors. So, like, that didn't really bother me as much. What bothered me was how Maul was able to just get on trail without anyone knowing about
And they knew she was coming.
Exactly.
And like, oh, we got people handle this. How, Sway?
That means that Maul was already there throughout the entire time.
Just chilling. Just chilling.
But they were supposed to be behind them because they didn't understand the clue and they went to Beta's head. So you went to Beta's head, hung a Yui, came back, looked at the clue, then got to Trill all before Discovery did a jump.
Yeah, and they figured out Trill. Yeah, they figured out Trill just a couple days after Discovery. When Discovery has Paul Stamets, Tilly,
it doesn't make
a lot of sense.
Yeah, this is what this has been a common refrain, and I'm not trying to get on Disco about this, but the Maul and Locke characters do not make sense to me.
Hello.
They have way. When I saw Maul on Trill, I was completely like, how. This can't be possible. They know who they're looking for. You know, and they suffered a lot through burn. And these are their most prized possessions, their symbionts, because there are so few left after the burn. So few left. And randos can just walk in.
And pick it up.
Think about it. Michael's entry to Trill was the most annoying thing. What planet? So what's the answer to this clue? They didn't stop. Whatever. Anyway, so Face the Strange. We have Michael and Rayner and Stamets. We find out later jumping through time and not just forward. They're going forward. They're going backward. They're also going to alternate futures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit, which if you recall in UFL, and I'm going to reference that a lot, that was the same thing, like little minuscule changes of time resulted in two different types of results, you know, and the head Krenim guy, I can't, for some reason, read from that 70s show.
Yes.
He was looking for a specific result, but even the minuscule change would turn it all over and screw it up. So this time bug is doing that. Like, it's taking them through these different things, and we don't know, you know, a possible future is very interesting as an option for a time jump because it's not set in stone. But the things we went to already happened. So it's interesting. It's, you know, we went back, and I was getting a little excited. For some reason, I thought we would see Lorca, but we didn't. We would see Lorca vibes, but no.
It would have been really nice to see Lorca. It really would have. I mean, I like him.
Yeah.
And Anorax is the leader of the Krenim.
Yes. That's right.
I don't know. My takeaway from the episode was that Calypso has now been pulled out of continuity. Calypso never happened.
Ah. Okay.
Remind me of the episode. Which one was
Calypso? Calypso is the short track where...
Where the ship is left alone.
Yes.
We were asking about... I remember when we were recording for the previous season, we were wondering when that would happen. Like, we thought last year was the basis for that short track. And that short track, though, according to Zora, was centuries past, right? And the ship wasn't even destroyed in the way it was in this one. But I don't know. I don't know if that short trek is going to come to pass. I mean, the ship was untouched. And it made me think that they would be returning to their home century. But
yeah, but Zara was listening to the same music that she listened to in Calypso. The camera angle that she was looking down on Rayner and Michael with was the same that she used with the guy in Calypso.
Yeah.
There were just all these callbacks to Calypso. And then now, well, I guess it hasn't happened yet because they haven't prevented the Breen from getting that technology. But it looks like they've knocked or they are knocking Calypso out of continuity, and it won't have happened by the end of the season.
the alt future that we get in this episode is based on the idea that Maul and Locke are successful, right?
In getting the information.
And getting the progenitor's tech and selling it to the Brain, who then decides to wreck shop all over the quadrants, all over the universe, basically.
Yeah.
And so we had that. Like I said, that was the alt future. The rest were all things that we've seen in the series. Uh-huh. You know, we get our Red Angel reference from season 2. We get even pre-series discovering a dry dock. We have Battle with Control, which was the end of season 2 as well. No.
Yeah, it was
Control season 2.
Yeah.
Control
season
2. Yeah.
We've
been doing a lot of season 2.
Season 2 is busy.
The retrofit when they get to the 32nd century. So we get all of these things that we have seen as viewers other than the what if the Brain gets their hand on the technology. And that's posited as a possibility. I personally, it's like if Maul and Locke did get the technology, they kind of deserve to get it. Like, because this is, I find them lacking as antagonists, but that is something I've mentioned before. There's what this episode really is about is Michael confronting her past and kind of closing that emotional loop between the two of them. We haven't had any indication that Michael feels that she doesn't deserve to be there,
mm-hmm.
In the position that she's in. But we know that the past one can't see that future for herself, like a future of being a captain. I mean, she was wasn't she a commander when?
Yep.
Episode 1 and 2 happened.
Yeah, Georgiou was about to put her up for a ship of her own when the Battle of the Binary Stars happened.
And so, you know, there's that tie between, okay, well, this is a way, even though they won't remember it if they fix the chronophage, that Michael can see that there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was her fighting, but also comforting herself. But then this was all basically, the other part of it was a lesson for Rayner.
Yeah.
Like he dresses down Reese at the beginning of the episode. Reese says a smart thing. Hey, you know, maybe they're doing this so they can follow us to the clue. Which, if that had been the case with Maul and Locke for Trill, I would have been like, okay, well, yeah, they don't know their way around these clues. The obvious mm-hmm. thing is to follow the enemy and just fight it out, which would be ridiculous too because that's an entire starship against their tiny selves. But it's working for them, I guess. So. And we get our emotional cues in this episode when we see Arium again.
It was nice to see her.
It was. It was. And Arium, you know, that entire bridge scene, though, was more for Rayner than it was for anybody else. Look what happens when you treat your crew with respect.
Yeah. Question about Arium, though, because if I recall, the actress who plays Arium is the one who plays who's the blonde bridge officer, right?
Yes, who is no longer. I think they mentioned
she's now on Voyager.
Yes, that's who they. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if they brought on Arium so they could have her on one more time.
Could be.
Which would be nice because she's been with the show since the very beginning.
Yep. It could be that. I could see that being the case.
Still a season of goodbyes. Staying.
Correct.
Letting everybody get their last.
They may not have known, but maybe they knew. I don't know.
Did Bryce go to Voyager too? Cause I'm really starting to, it's really starting to play into my fan theory that Bryce and what's her name had a thing.
Oh, you know what? Speaking of, this was the first time we've seen Bryce this season.
Right, because we saw him in the flashback. Yeah.
So they brought that actor back as well.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
Yeah.
The
barbershop was still running back then.
Oh, yeah. The dots were there.
The dot barbershop. You know, I wonder, I wonder, but the flashback made me think of something. I wasn't too keen on Michael in the flashback. Because I like Michael, and I have liked Michael. But the way they
portrayed, she was so
like animalistic.
Yeah, that wasn't really her.
Yeah, that was not how Michael was portrayed 5 years ago.
Oh, I feel like Michael 5 years ago would still have the logic to be like, I don't know how it happened.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like, you're right. Like the whole, she was just way too jumping the gun. She jumped the gun way too much, to try to redeem herself. And I don't think that's where that character was at.
No, she was still very much like herself.
Yeah.
Back then, like, okay, I believe this, but I have to convince you to listen to me.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't, she would not have attacked her future self in that way. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Especially when her future self told her that she was her future self. And she had an entirely different hairstyle, the whole thing. It's like,
been some logic ass. Like, where's your logic? Prove it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In first season, even when she came out of prison, she was still very much the
open part of her.
I agree. Thinking about it now, it did feel a little strange.
Yeah, I would actually love to find out why Sonequa, because that's really, those were acting choices. She could have done the performance a different way. Why Sonequa chose to take her down that road in those scenes.
I don't know. I mean, it could be, but also it could be like Michael was, in the script, it could be Michael was extremely hostile towards, I don't know. Perhaps you thought that Michael was desperate to prove herself, but I don't recall her being that desperate.
No, because she was like real. She seemed to be really weary of Lorca at that point, and the way that she's depicted in that episode just seemed. Like she was trying to get the approval of Lorca and the crew, and I don't recall Michael being like that.
No. She was very much like, we are, because Lorca was still doing things, because as we know, that was Mirror Lorca.
Mm-hmm.
She would say, we're Starfleet, this is not the way we do things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, yes, I did that. And 100% she was right because she did consult people first, whatever I said, what I said. But she was still very much like, we are Starfleet. We do things this way. We don't devalue life. She felt guilty about it, but she took it in a way. Like she wasn't that desperate. Like when she met Detmer and Owo again, she was apologetic, but she wasn't. Yeah. Okay. I hear you.
Yep.
This just makes me want to go back and watch the first season again.
That's what I thought too. I was like, I'm going to go back and rewatch the first season, but then I'll probably get angry at this episode.
Well, there's a few things. I mean, Travis, you weren't here when we were talking about it in episode one and two, or episode two, I mean, when she was on the planet with Saru and they were discussing their relationship. And it wasn't that, and I mentioned, I said, this is a little bit of a retcon. Because Saru had beef with Michael that was outside of the whole battle of the binary stars thing. Outside of that, he didn't like her before then, before mm-hmm. she even, betrayed and quotes Georgiou.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's carried over in this novel by David Mack, Desperate mm-hmm. Hours, like their whole beef was depicted in there. And she had way different hair in the first season too.
Yes. They gave her the Mutineer, I just got you out of prison hair.
Yeah, they did not have perm chemicals in the penal colony that she was in.
I guess so. She didn't get her hair done. That's all right. She was
not delivering.
So another thing in this episode we got or was revealed to us was why Maul and Locke are on the hunt for this technology, and that's because there is a bounty on their heads. Mm-hmm. A very, very, very large one. Large enough that the only way to get rid of it is...
No, it's not.
No, it was this one.
Wait.
They mentioned it in this one.
We learned the deep parts in the next episode.
Yeah, the why is in episode 5.
Yeah. We learned why there's a bounty.
They had the bounty is in episode 4.
Mm.
So I'm not saying why it's there, but it's a bounty that's large enough that this technology is the only thing that could lift it.
Yeah. And since I haven't seen the next episode, I would really like to know what they did to get that large bounty.
You will. Don't tell me more. A few things. You'll see. Okay. You.
And it was stupid.
Oh. It was pretty dumb because we'll talk about it next time. but it doesn't meet the standards of me as someone like why it has to be this. You know, why this is who we're having to deal with throughout this season. And so they're in for the long haul. I mean, like I said, I've seen episode 5 with Marisha. They're still around. So that is that we're in for the long haul with them. I thought it would be like, the captain from Picard who was the protagonist until she wasn't. So, hey. I mean, the antagonist until she wasn't. She died. The captain, with the,
Yep, that got blew up.
She was amazing. I loved her. But
wait, on Picard. Yeah.
Season 3. The changeling.
Oh yeah.
She
was killed. Yeah. I thought that would be a lock, but they're still around, so I imagine they're gonna go towards the end of the season with them as well. So, you know, this is who we're dealing with, and we also have some callbacks from previous seasons. With Stamets. Stamets is also able to recognize that they're jumping through time. They're able to help with it. They're referencing the changes that he underwent biologically due to the spore drive. Uh-huh. That's helping him stay outside of time.
I love the offhand reference to, the tardigrade DNA. And how Rainer's just, what?
What is that?
Yeah, things happen, my guy, you know. Welcome to Discovery.
You better know your crew.
Things just happen. You know, we have a guy who was dead and now he's alive.
We have a guy that's part mushroom.
Yeah.
There's not a lot that can really be covered in 20 words or less.
Yes. And poor Michael, who has traveled through time so many times, it makes me wonder if her DNA is affected.
Yes.
She was Red Angel.
She becomes a part of the time police. Because she's done it so much.
Oh, like relativity?
About those people in Voyager?
On the relativity? Whatever their version of the relativity is in that time period?
Yeah.
You know, that's what I really was hoping was going to happen with
Discovery. The time police show up? I thought they were.
Too. No, I was hoping that Discovery was going to end up jumping into various time frames.
Yeah, like DNA technically can do that.
I thought that's what, cause that was the whole thing with the spore drive was that they were outside of time. So I thought at the end of season 2 that Discovery was going to end up like becoming like a time ship and jumping between times and like alternate universes and basically, showing us all of Star Trek through the eyes of Discovery and its crew. But, that is not what it is.
That should.
No, maybe someday we'll get a show that is. Maybe someday, not with these characters, but maybe someday. There isn't much to this episode. I hate to say it.
It's a time loop episode.
It's a model episode. I mean, it was easy enough to do. And, I liked that we got to explore Reese and his love of the Constitution class again. I'd like to find out that, that he served on a Constitution at some point, but then we'd have to learn more about the characters and why would we want to that.
I've learned more about Reese in the last 2 weeks. we learned more about him. Yeah. I'm trying to remember if
I was about to reference something, and I can't remember if it was from episode 5 or not, and so I'm not going to reference it, about Detmer and Awoshakun. Was that episode 5? I believe it was.
Before they were mad at Michael, when Michael showed up on the bridge, they didn't. We still got some of that leftover feud from Detmer had for her, for sure.
Yes. Episode 5. It was episode 5, so I won't say what I was about to say. I know what I was about to say. But, yes, going back to that was fun. I mean, I can understand Kayla's beef, right? But at the same time, none of these people knew anything about the Klingons. But this is rehashing season 1. We didn't have Black Alert podcast when season 1 came out. True. And so there's a lot of feelings. I have a lot of feelings about season 1, that are kind of just like sitting in my gut that I just want to say. But we are talking about the final season, and maybe one day we'll get back to some of the earlier things, because I do think being years away from that now, you know, we're year 7 of Disco because it started in 2017. You do appreciate some of the things that they tried to do, even if they didn't succeed in the way that the writers and the producers thought. There were some things worth discussing, and I think I'm going to be honest. I think it being set and that I always said beforehand, I'm tired of Star Trek set in time periods we've already visited. But with it being there, I don't have the same sort of issues I have with Disco in the 32nd century. We don't know anything about the 32nd century, really. There was a burn. A lot of people died. Sukal did it. That's it.
That's it.
Yeah, that's all you need to know.
We don't even know why Earth left the Federation, really. Not truly. You know, a Cardassian is...
They haven't even bothered to write any novels to tell us any of this stuff. Like, they're just not bothering.
So all of these time skips, you know, through things in the past, it's like, okay, we got to see actors we won't be able to see later episodes, you know, as a, hey, we remember you. You were there in this different era of Disco, because that's, you know, seasons 1 and 2, completely different universe, basically. Mm-hmm. But we remember that you were there, and hey, thank you for coming, Bryce. We haven't seen you all season, but you've been here. I mean, Bryce came in what, season 2? I don't think was Bryce in season 1?
I think he might have been on season 1.
Was he just a fade in season 1? Just a haircut for a while?
He might have been just a fade on the bridge. Because we didn't know he was the communications officer until season 2 for sure. But, cause I remember Pike.
He was in season 1.
Yeah, cause Pike introduced himself to him.
Okay. Wow. Season 1, episode 3. So he's been there since the beginning as well. So I apologize for that mistake. And, you know, we're getting as Marisha said, this is a season of goodbyes, even if they hadn't known. And I think that I want that more at this point. I'm not really like, or I guess let me take that back. I want the treasure hunt to be sexier. It's not sexy.
No.
Like, is the progenitor tech actually going to live up to this hype? They're telling us they are the building blocks of they created life, essentially. And can you truly live up to that?
I want them to tell me how it's different than the Genesis device.
Ooh.
Because the Federation did it 800 years ago. I mean, the Federation did it 20 years after Michael left.
Yeah.
How is it different? How is it better? Like, this should not just be a MacGuffin. They should have actually thought this out. I don't like, and that's the thing. Like, Discovery gets enough heat on the internet. It doesn't need me to add to it. But this is part of the problem I have with Discovery as a whole. They come up with really cool ideas, but they don't see them through. They just give us like superficial renditions of what could possibly be a really cool idea. Just becomes, you know, just this very thin story. And I think a lot of it is because it's a more of a character driven show than it is a plot driven show. And I'll accept that. But, to me, you know, if you're giving me such a good plot, flesh that out, man. Flesh that out applies to Discovery as a whole. And I think the 10 episode model for Discovery doesn't work because, and I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but Discovery has always been about establishing a universe, right? Like, Strange New Worlds works in a 10-episode series because we know that universe. We know that it's only a few years before Kirk becomes captain. Kirk's even there way more often than he needs to be. So Kirk is like the Urkel of Strange New Worlds. You know, he just shows up and, you know, Carl/Pike is like, what's he doing here? But, Discovery has always had a problem with not fleshing out its world. And I believe it's because they've been stuck with this 10-episode model, and that works for plot. It does not work for plot and character. It would have worked for plot. It would have worked for character. It cannot work for plot and character. I am done.
100% correct. And there's not much to really say to that. There's nothing that it's not going to be fixed. That's the unfortunate part of it.
You have to like call this a failure of Discovery. This was one of the failures of Discovery was the 10 that it was stuck in a 10 episode model that could not that was
this and well, I'll give it that. They didn't do it a 10 episode model in the first two or three seasons, I think.
They had 13, right?
13 or 14.
Okay.
Some of them. So they had some room to work, but they didn't replicate some of the things about Star Trek that work. Mm-hmm. It sounds like later on in the seasons, they did pull some of the aspects that work, but we're still, the setting is what is holding them back. Because we don't, like, there's so much we don't know. And they didn't really take the opportunity to show us this new era we're in, this new century we're in. Like we talked about in our previous episode, we were on Trill. We've seen Trill in DS9. We've seen Trill in Discovery before.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't seen, we get snippets of these new planets. But either there's no one living on them, or we spend maybe 2 seconds with some of the inhabitants of these planets. We don't get, like, the opening of Disco, was it season 4, with the butterfly people?
Yeah.
Like, that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
We needed more of that.
Yep.
And we unfortunately, we won't get it. And right. I think they did a disservice to the actors that they got for this show. I would like to do at the end of this, because we are kind of gone off topic of episode 4, but I would like to do kind of an introspective of Disco after I sit down and rewatch some of the earlier episodes, because it has been a few years since I've seen them. But I can say without a shadow of a doubt that Disco deserved better. Sonequa Martin Green deserved better. Doug Jones deserved better. Michelle Yeoh deserved better. Some of our other actors, and I'm sorry, I can't recall their names right now. deserve better. Wilson Cruz deserved better. Like, the people have been there from the beginning, and held on through all of the criticisms, even though Disco is vastly important, because we wouldn't have some of the shows we have now without Discovery. Like, Disco had to be first in order for these other shows to exist. We could have had, even with 5 seasons, a better one. It's kind of like Enterprise. Like Enterprise is trash at the beginning, but towards the end, it found its footing and it got good. And by then, we lost it. But even Enterprise, for all of its kind of trashy episodes, I know Archer.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know Hoshi. I know Travis. You know, I know these characters. It's just...
It's and
they could have let Discovery be the explorers when they got to the future. They could have took what the seasons 3, 4, and 5 of Enterprise did, not 3, 4, and 5 of Next Generation, and let them explore what is, and just have a callback episode to places we've been, and that would have been a great show because we would still been expanding that universe, learning something new, but most of all, getting invested in these characters.
I mean, building the network again, because the Federation fallen apart. Building the network between the planets again would have been cool as all get out. If Discovery and its spore drive was the only way for the Federation worlds to communicate with each other again after 800 years, oh man, I mean, that would have been crazy. That would have been so much fun to, and also we have yet to see Klingons.
Like, seriously?
Oh yeah, we haven't seen Klingons. Still no Klingons.
We're not going to see them. That's it.
We're not going to see Klingons.
We will only ever see the ones from Picard. Like, that's it. Worf. There you go.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah, we need to, and I'm sorry for getting us off track because I have a whole host of ideas of what they should have done differently. And, this isn't even just with, the showrunners. I throw a lot of this at, Paramount. So I'm going to do a PowerPoint presentation. That's how I live. I'm going to do a tersely worded PowerPoint presentation.
I think that's required. I mean, you can see the changes. So I would say Picard suffered from the same thing. And I know I just want to say this. It seems like the big bad. Rather, you don't need a big bad. Previous generations of Star Trek showed you don't need a season-wide big bad. Even DS9 understood that, even though they had the changelings, the founders, and all of that, they still were able to slide in the character building episodes, the political ones, the Bajorans outside of that battle. Like, we got these full things, and that was because probably due to the 20 episode seasons, which are gone in general, not just, I think Law and Order is like the only show that is still getting 20 episode seasons.
And so,
you know, but we would have to, someone has to be brave enough to bring back that style of television.
And I'm going to point to Hasparat and Jum'jah Styx as the things that are missing from modern Trek.
Yeah, because they reference that. How many Ractogenos did you have, Adira?
Yeah.
We only know that because random lines in DS9.
Because of DS9. Like, we don't know, like, anything like that about the future. You know, what's the... I mean, we haven't learned any cool thing like... what's
we don't
a,
know any drinks.
Yeah, no drinks, no food.
No any new slang. No
slang. It's just the world stopped.
Are we still trading in Latin?
Yes, we learned that in episode 4.
In
episode 4, because Maul and Locke tricked a guy who gave them a bag full of Latinum, because nobody ever gives people bags full. It's always a case full, because then you have to count it. He told us that. But, I mean, that's the thing. It's 1,000 years in the future, and they're still using Latinum. Why?
Like, this should have changed. That should have been something the writers of Discovery took a chance on. And this may be something we don't know about how the showrunners, how tightly they control the information or changes to Ken. I mean, that's the thing. Disco took a lot of heat for what people interpreted as changes to canon or changes to the Star Trek universe. And maybe that scared people off from doing that. But I thought moving to that 32nd century would have given them the freedom to do that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a world deal.
Yeah, because then canon doesn't have to matter at all. Because what happened 1,000 years ago in the world today has no bearing. Well, that's not true. That's not true. But in the little details, doesn't have a great deal of bearing. Again, that's not true. But okay. You should be able to be able to ride out the differences, that the changes that started 1,000 years ago, and see where they've developed now. And they've done nothing as far as change. It's just the same. It's just the uniforms that are different. And Starfleet.
Oh yeah, the fits are nice.
Oh, the fits are nice. The fits are real nice. And Starfleet headquarters is nice.
Real nice, real nice.
Tell me about it. But you know, my last complaint about it is they had the opportunity for this to be a multimedia show. It didn't have to be just on television. They could have been doing books. They could have been doing comics. They could have been doing web series. Short Trek started. They could have been doing, you know, just websites. Think of all the ARGs that we saw over the for Halo and AI and things like that. Use all the developments to make just this really rich world. And Paramount didn't. They just failed. And Discovery suffered for all of that. Discovery should have been the flagship show of Star Trek, and it wasn't.
Nope. And now somehow Strange New Worlds has become.
Yeah, because they don't have to do any of that stuff because the world is established.
Exactly. Their coverage is better. It's actually kind of frustrating for me, but that is a discussion for another time. I feel like all of us have a lot to say about that. And I think maybe at the end of the season, I want to give it a chance to finish before. I mean, some of these are longstanding things that we've discussed over the years. But I want to give it the chance to end before I say it.
Before I beat its dead body.
Yes, because I do love Discovery. Honestly, I remember when I heard about it, how excited I was, how I tweeted about it, and how the day that the first episode came out, because it aired on television too. Uh-huh. I was in my office. I had my popcorn. Because I was so excited to see Star Trek again, and I'm 7 years older now, and now it's just, you get more, when you get away from the, oh my God, it's back, the nostalgia play of it, and when you separate your fandom heart from it, you get to see where some things have gone wrong. And let me be clear, everyone. I don't think there is a perfect Star Trek series out there. Every show has its problem. I know what I think and what I believe is as close to my style of television that I would prefer to watch is which series does that for me. Mm-hmm. But as Travis said, Disco this should have been the flagship one. It was the first one on TV after how many years? Enterprise ended a long time ago. And it didn't get its fair shake at the beginning. A lot of folks went into Discovery without wanting to give it a chance. Mm-hmm. And so I think the loudest voices have had an impact on the direction of this series. Not for good. For ill in some cases. But that, like I said, that's a discussion for another time. Any other comments on episode 4?
It's a time loop.
I liked it well enough. I always like the bottle episodes. I love the time loop episodes. It was nice to refer back to Stamets and his tardigrade DNA and how lets him exist at a time. I liked Raynor as basically as the viewpoint part character. He got to be us for a moment and kind of to see how.
Yeah, what the hell?
Exactly. How weird Discovery is. And and I like the crew interaction. Like, this was the first time in 5 years that I honestly felt the bond with the crew, with the whole crew. Not just the little core that they always tell us needs to be the who the show is about. I felt bonded to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that disappointed me, because if that's the way the show is going to go moving forward, that was the plan for the next, to use that as a jump start to making that how the show worked. It really makes the loss of Discovery, even sadder, because it was so good. I liked their interaction.
I guess even the introduction of the newer characters has been, the newer Bridge folks has been like, okay, I see what you're doing here. They're getting more lines. They're getting more involved in the solving of that episode's mystery. So we'll see how it goes. This is episode 4. We have six episodes left.
And we're done.
Then we're finished. No breaks. So 6 weeks from now, we will be watching the other episodes and the final one and lamenting.
I'm gonna cry.
I probably will too, honestly. But that being said, we've just finished an episode. I'm sorry that our discussions have gotten a little bit, but the fact is we like these episodes, but they're kind of low on content. They're low on meat. They're skinny. Okay. You know, these episodes aren't bringing a lot in content at this point. Like they're hitting their points. We're on this thing. We're going against Maul and Locke. Boom, that's it. So,
as we move on.
There has been not a hint of subtext these first 5 episodes. Not a metaphor. Oh. Nothing. Like, this show is all text right now.
They're letting you know, you're getting what you're getting, guys.
Yep.
And so, it seems very clean. There's nothing to take out of it, but we'll see how it goes as the weeks continue. Once again, we thank you for listening. Can you believe it? This is the 3rd episode we're recording, in a while. You're going to hear that. It's insane. So please stick with us as we continue discussing Disco and as we work on getting our other episodes out for Picard and I believe Strange New Worlds. So thank you once again, and, just keep on trekking.
Just keep trekking. Hello.